Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Print Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Sarah Gon in the Magaliesberg. Sarah, how are you?
I'm very well, and coming to you live from the Magaliesberg, what could possibly go wrong?
Yes, hopefully your signal will remain intact through the whole show, but I'm sure that'll be fine. And we're also joined today by Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. I think live from the Magaliesberg sounds like a good movie title, so I look forward to what Sarah will produce at some point. I'm coming to you live from the exotic location that is Johannesburg. So there we go.
Yeah, well, me too. And we'll get to that in a minute because the mayor is
actually
getting
becoming
up my nose
a bit more exciting by the day. So we shouldn't actually.
Yeah. No, the mayor is getting up my nose a bit and I don't have water again. But we'll get to that in a second. But first, let's start off with something that suspiciously looks like good news, which is, you know, a precious thing in South Africa. And that is that former cabinet minister Zizi Kodwa has resigned from parliament. So Zizi Kodwa was an ANC member of parliament. He was named by the Zondo Commission report as potentially being involved in corruption. I think it was amounting to a 1 million rand bribe or something during the time when he was a sports minister. His reappointment to parliament was very heavily criticized, not just by civil society, but also by groups within the ANC, including the ANC Veterans League, who were very upset that he was included on the list. And in fact, this was some controversy because the ANC had initially declared that people named in the Zondo Commission report and people credibly accused of corruption and facing charges would have to step aside from important positions, would have to not go to parliament. And then when it came time for the election, that sort of just seemed to be ignored for the most part. So there was a lot of cynicism that was very justified about whether the ANC was very serious about tackling some kind of corruption. Well, it is interesting to see now that he has in fact resigned, apparently due to significant pressure from within the party behind the scenes. Snooki Zikilala, who is the leader of the ANC Veterans League, expressed his unhappiness that Zizi Kodwa ever went to parliament in the first place, and that one of the reasons the ANC had done badly in this election was precisely because they had let people like Zizi Kodwa go to parliament when they shouldn't have, and that resulted in lots of people staying away from the polls and not voting for the ANC. This is quite interesting because it does suggest that the ANC is at least trying to improve its image with regards to sort of the impunity for corruption that so many of its members seem to have had. Sarah, let me start with you. What do you think of this move? Should we am I reading too much into it, or is this actually, do you think, maybe little green shoots of a little bit more accountability in the ANC?
I probably take a slightly more cynical view of it in that I think what the ANC has probably learnt is that Zizi Kodwa, of all the variety of corrupt ANC politicians, is not a hill to die upon, if I don't mix my metaphors too much.
Yes.
That what they are doing is acting more decisively, more quickly, expeditiously. I think given the sort of changing reputation that the GNU offers it, to say, you know, if there's no point in being seen to treat everyone like they're precious. He's not precious. He may wear the coolest glasses, but he's not important enough for us to be diverted, because he appeared in court again in the last week. So I think the idea of seeing an MP repeatedly be appearing in court on charges of corruption, I think it's an image thing much more than anything else. But I guess you never know. It just might have some effect. But I think because so many people are compromised at such at high levels, it's not a real reform.
No, I think that's right. But, you know, one can also see this as being like sort of the crack in the wall. You know, they're trying to, rather than having a policy of defending literally everyone all the time from corruption for any reason, there's now sort of a a belief that, okay, we actually have to cede some ground here if we're going to protect the core, you know, because our most senior leaders, I'm sure, also, if you start digging deep enough, have nefarious connections that they don't want out in public. It is very interesting to see. Chris, what do you make of this? I think that, you know, at the very least, one can say that, you know, there's a lot of cynicism out there that elections don't change anything. But I actually think that you would never have seen a move like this happen if the ANC had maintained above 50% of the vote in the election. What do you make of that?
You know, I tend to lean in favor of Sarah's analysis of the situation. I think it's useful so much as in politics in terms of perception. So whether for good or bad, there's a positive perception around the GNU for the time being. So you, as a participant therein, with a stake in it, need to add some sort of impetus and help that along as far as you can, because it does benefit you in some way. So we'll need to see if similar actions follow, either through the National Prosecuting Authority or others, or from the ANC internally. That will help build more of a substantial positive, not just perception, but in actual fact that there has been some sort of, not change of heart completely, but some acknowledgement of what the party has done, what its members, its representatives have caused, the damage in terms of corruption, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm looking for a more maybe sustainable path going forward to see whether this is just for expediency or whether there's actually anything meaningful behind it. I will say, to your point, Nick, I think it's good that we're in a very different context from where we were before the elections, and parties are going to respond to that context in ways that maybe we could have predicted, but will surprise us in some other instances. So it does open up the range of possibilities at the very least, and the knock-on effects of that. So you're not going to get people in prison overnight, for example. It's not a mass sort of action kind of thing, but maybe this all builds on each other over time, these sorts of examples, possibly.
So one of the things that's been very frustrating to me about Cyril Ramaphosa is that he sort of promised change in South Africa when he became the head of the ANC in 2017. And he was very well placed to do so. He was popular with most South Africans, being by far the most popular politician in the country. He had managed to win significant support within the ANC itself, support that at the next elective conference he sort of managed to enhance. So he was in a really good spot. He also had the advantage of having a very, very, very many of his opponents within the ANC, and actually probably without it too, if one kind of looks at the sort of MK, EFF crowds, who probably have some kind of case of corruption that if you actually looked into it, you could nail them with. And yet, relatively little was done. Ramaphosa sat on his hands and prioritized party unity at every single stage that he could. He always chose to kind of protect the ANC whenever he had an opportunity to remove a political opponent. The one exception, I think, being Ace Magashule, who was sort of eventually thrown out of the party. But even that took ages, and he was basically at war with Ramaphosa openly before that happened. So, you know, in many ways, he was the king of missing chances. But once again, I think the GNU has, in a sense, given him another opportunity to maybe do things a little bit differently. Sarah, firstly, do you think he will miss this opportunity too? And secondly, if he actually decides to take it hypothetically, regardless of whether he is or isn't, who should be the next person that Ramaphosa would go after?
In answer to the second question, honestly, don't know. It's like, but it was that they've ended up with 40% of the of the vote, despite, or perhaps because of, striving for this absolute unity where no one is guilty until they're proven guilty. It doesn't matter how much of a PR disaster it is, and you don't want PR disasters at this sort of level. And that might give him a little more aggression, but you know, there are risks that if it happens too much, and Wow, I don't know. Maybe the tenders for new prisons are rolling in, but if it happens too much, it's going to, reach the top, and you know, they want to avoid that as much as possible. Particularly as the EFF is now, spotlight on VBS. So I think it's a little early to tell. But as I say, otherwise, sadly, I think poor old Dizzy Cordesway would have been such a waste of energy and PR disadvantage.
Well, I think we need to be thankful for small victories. And this is definitely a small victory, but it's a victory nonetheless for those who want good governance in South Africa, to see someone credibly accused of corruption dropping out of our parliament. Okay, so let's move on to our next story. And this is about something we've already talked about in the week, which is that President Ramaphosa, at the end of the debate at the opening of parliament, said that non-racialism was not a concession, was not an act of charity. And he hit out at all of what he said was race-baiting, name-calling, and ethnic chauvinism that had taken place in the debate over his speech to Parliament, the opening of Parliament. Well, we were very praising of that sentiment. And one of the reasons that we were praising of that sentiment, even though it is just some rhetoric in a speech so far, is just how bad rhetoric in South Africa has gotten when it comes to race at the moment. And this week we've had two horrible examples of people manipulating either being racist or using race to shield themselves. So the first is Johannesburg Mayor Kabelo Gwamanda, who may not be long in the mayoral position, as the Action SA is currently talking to the ANC about basically throwing him out of the mayorship in Johannesburg. Gwamanda, however, declared himself the victim of an unfair campaign to remove him as mayor, saying that he was only being targeted because he's a black man from Soweto. He says, "I'm not the only mayor who has challenges. It's just that I'm the only one that they feel should take responsibility and blame for it, which in my opinion is hypocritical. The calls to my removal, those are in fact baseless in my view. I can, without fear of contradiction, say it's a clarion call from those who have united against a black child to send a strong message to stay in your place or suffer the consequences. Alternatively, Mayor Gwamanda, perhaps the reason is because you've been a terrible mayor. I am now for the third time without water this year, so I'm rather annoyed myself, but I'm not the only one. Many Johannesburg residents have been very poorly served by the city's services and infrastructure, power outages, water outages, problems with sewage systems, problems with traffic, problems with absolutely everything you can think of in the city, and it has messing up the lives of the poorest to the richest in this city. So the sooner he is chucked out, the better, as far as I'm concerned, because I think he has been an awful mayor of Johannesburg. But that's just my view. At the same time, in the Tshwane Metro Council, an EFF councillor, whose name I have misplaced, but I will quote you what he said in the council meeting. This was a council meeting where Silius Brink, the mayor of Tshwane, initially kind of on social media put out a video criticizing the calls for his removal that the ANC had initiated in a motion of no confidence against him. Silius Brink said that the motion of no confidence against me is aimed at taking us back to the days of looting, of internal mismanagement and no consequences, whereas this multi-party coalition government is building a capital city that can work for all of its people. In response to this, Brink was referred to, I think, by an ANC councillor as a, quote, small white boy, and the finance MMC was called a white model who is insulting us. Things got worse when the EFF's regional chairperson, Ramabudu, said that he was craving to Mura Abura. I'm craving to Mura Abura. I want the blood of an Afrikaner. I would be happy to Mura Abura. That would be nice. An Afrikaner's blood. I want the blood of an Afrikaner. Bring the blood of an Afrikaner. I want it. Sounds like he might be a very starved vampire. He was, of course, this caused an enormous uproar in the council, and he was asked to apologize and withdraw this remark by the speaker. He then lied about what he had said, saying, "I was told I was going to be beaten, and I said I'd suck the blood of an Afrikaner, but if that was taken out of context, then I will apologize and withdraw." So it's just so pathetic, actually.
Yeah, I mean, certainly one of the I firmly believe that when race baiting is part of the political discourse, those uttering it usually either have something to hide in the sense of malfeasance, or they have nothing to offer in the sense of making the lives of South Africans better. And I think this is very much the case with the EFF. So this doesn't surprise me, because the EFF and the ANC, EFF and the ANC in Tshwane are really in a tricky position, because processes regarding tenders are changing or have been changed. Now, with our esteemed mayor, it's a little bit sad, because if you want equality, which is something, you know, we strive for in this country, and then, you know, equality should be in consideration when you're appointed to a position. Equality should also be applied if people want you out of your position because you're no good at what you do. And as far as I know, the ANC is the entity that wants him removed first and foremost. And the ASA says it will only support the ANC on certain issues if they remove him. So I'm not sure I see, you know, if black men, you know, being racist towards other black men is racism, then we've sealed the debate, and we can honestly say that racism is not worth talking about. He's an executive mayor. He's not a head. He's actually equivalent of a CEO. So if he either didn't do his job because he couldn't, or he didn't do what the party, the ANC and EFF, wanted him to do, then either way, he's not performing. So, you know, poor performance, one, racism, naught.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, I think that was what was so nice about the president actually calling out race baiting, is just how poisonous our public debate has gotten on so many levels, particularly coming from the EFF. You know, this is the EFF in Tshwane seems to particularly have a bit of an issue. They've had so many controversies, physical altercations with other members of the council. I know they tried to blockade an office a few years ago. There really, I think, should be stronger action taken, because calling for the murder of someone for their race, even though I think within council your words receive a high level of protection for you, it just said that on social media. It's just so pathetic. Anyway, your thoughts?
I've been wondering after the election results how the EFF took those results and what lessons or learnings or insights, if any, there would be that they could take from those. And at the moment, it looks like we're going to double down. You're going to continue with your rhetoric that was the case beforehand. You might promise to build a school. You might do all sorts of those fancy things, but you're not actually going to do anything practical. And you're going to disrupt. You're going to use rhetoric that borders on violence. You're going to try and use your platforms to disrupt normal governmental operations. And you tried that, and it didn't translate into a higher vote share. So what do you actually want to achieve? What do you want to do? Maybe in the long term, we'll figure that out. But for now, I'm not seeing the level that was from the third biggest party in the country before this year's election. So that level of seriousness, wanting to be maybe some sort of principled opposition in the government, in the national government, you know, there's an opportunity there, but I'm not seeing that level of ownership and responsibility and recognizing what maybe platform you do enjoy. So I fully support what Sarah said around, you know, use that sort of rhetoric when you're in a particularly desperate position, or maybe just to cause some sort of, to grab some attention. Maybe you think it's playing to a few of your supporters, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think it's going to do much for you in the longer term. And that's also not to say that that's what individuals like that want to achieve. Maybe that's not really the the ultimate goal. As to Johannesburg.
The EFF, I think, really actually has no idea what to do. It went backwards in the selection. It's sort of flailing around confusedly. And I think that, it's now kind of retreating into the most base and backwards of its approaches, which is just to racialize everything and become more extreme. And I think it's going to backfire on them. Our polling has shown that most South Africans do not care for this kind of rhetoric. And, this is, I think, only going to lead the EFF into a dead end if they continue to allow things like this. And if, there's, as far as I can tell, there's no calls from EFF leadership to discipline him for these comments, which means that they are, I guess, endorsed, at least tacitly, by EFF's leadership.
Just as to Johannesburg, it'll be interesting to see how the current maybe negotiations and moves shake out and affect the provincial government, which is at the moment a minority government, and possibly also on national level in the government of national unity, where you've got the mayor in Johannesburg as a representative and member of Al Jamaah. Al Jamaah is also a member of the government of national unity. So should the ANC provincially now, led by Premier Panyaza Lusufi, move against him, does that open up more tension and friction between provincial and national ANC possibly? Then on the other hand, if you've now possibly got Action SA and the ANC working together in some way to get some kind of deal going in the city of Tshwane, again, does that affect things nationally, where Action SA then possibly joins the government of national unity with all the potential clashes there with especially the Democratic Alliance?
Indeed. All right, let's move on to our last story. This is a little bit of a different one. But kind of when you think about it, it's not super unexpected. So the first detail that we're not really going to get into at all here is that apparently in Limpopo, I believe, this week, there was the discovery of a meth manufacturing lab, which was apparently being run by illegal immigrants from Mexico, which to me suggests that it's very likely that there's a connection to the drug cartels in Mexico. They're manufacturing drugs apparently in South Africa. And now, in something slightly different but very closely related, there has been a suspected military training base uncovered in White River in Mpumalanga. Police spokesperson Colonel Donald Mbluli said that 95 Libyan nationals had been arrested at this site. The place, which was initially designated as a training site, appears to have been converted into an illegal military training base. The acting Mpumalanga police commissioner said that police take any threat to provincial and national security and stability very seriously. So firstly, I mean, good that the police did seem to have arrested the people at the site and taken them into custody and are investigating. But I don't think this is the only one of these. Unfortunately, the complete collapse of South Africa's ability to control its borders, to police itself effectively, and to have proper intelligence means that we are very much a transit hub and a base for all sorts of nefarious groups around the world, whether they be terrorist organizations, whether they be drug organizations. And it's obviously not good, because having those elements entrenched in your society suggests that even if their main focus is on exporting fighters to the Middle East or exporting drugs to the US or whatever, these are people who can very definitely influence the criminal scene in South Africa for the worse. Chris, what do you make of this?
Yeah, when you've got the steady hollowing out of your intelligence agencies and services, not to dismiss what's happened to the police, the army, your border posts and operations, then that this sort of thing just becomes all the easier. It will surprise you in many ways how it manifests, but when state power especially is no longer present, something is going to fill that vacuum. So what that might be, of course, is now seen. Other examples of this in places like Mali, Niger, where the Africa Corps, formerly the Wagner Group, in various ways now through, for example, spreading of fake news, supporting certain individuals in the militaries and the militias there, upend governments, and then ultimately they get to operate in the chaos that results when there isn't one singular monopoly on force. So it's just much easier for entities, cells, networks along terrorist sort of non-state lines to operate when they can undermine or then operate in countries where the central government is either very corruptible or just isn't present. So it comes as little surprise, unfortunately, and it becomes all the more difficult to uproot these sorts of networks when you don't have those capacities in your intelligence and your police, when the incentives are rather to be involved in those networks and to protect them versus getting rid of them. So we'll need to see exactly, there'll be now investigations, et cetera, as to how this was allowed to happen. But I don't think it's the last of this particular kind of thing, because we simply have the conditions for this sort of thing to occur. And despite, you know, for example, some of the progress that I think has been made around getting South Africa off the grey list, things like, financing of terror organizations, et cetera, more oversight, this just sets that back so substantially. And I think this partly helps to understand why South Africa would be seen in that particular light, along with some other countries around the world, when you don't have the correct systems, institutions, laws, et cetera, in place.
Just this week, I think the US sanctioned another South African, I think this being the second one, for allegedly being part of financing networks for ISIS. And apparently the terror group ISIS is at least in part being funded by kidnapping and robbery schemes being run in South Africa, which then raise the money and send it to the main headquarters of the group in other parts of the world. So this very directly has an impact on our organized crime scene in South Africa. Sarah, unfortunately, this is not particularly new. The Mbeki government actually did launch a investigation into the possible use of South Africa as a training ground for terror groups back in I think the late 2000s, and found that it was very likely that in fact Al-Qaeda at the time had probably been using South Africa as a staging ground, I think in the Northern Cape, on a farm out there somewhere to train some of its operatives. But the sort of bigger context for South Africa about this is currently, right now as we speak, there is a delegation from the Department of Trade and Industry with I think both the minister and the deputy minister who are trying to save our relationship with the United States right now as we speak by speaking to members of Congress in the US. A story like this, not really going to boost the Americans' confidence that we're a great partner to have. What do you make of this?
I think one of the most concerning things about this from an ideological point of view is that us, as opposed to the Palestinians and the Gazans, but Hamas itself, may blinded to the fact that groups like Hamas, ISIS, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, etc., Al-Qaeda, they are all, their foundations are those of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a very powerful ideological force, which essentially sees that anyone who does not practice pure form of Islam, whether they be Westerners or moderate Muslims, actually deserve death in the end. In other words, it's terrorism at its highest level. And I think even in the responses or the muted responses to the terrorism that's occurred in northern Mozambique, that sort of unmitigated adherence to anything that Hamas says or does, has consequences that the ANC has not taken into account. And I think it would probably be somewhat surprised if the US does not react favorably in light of what is happening, because that would be seen as a direct attack on US interests. The other thing, of course, is that the link between the funding of terrorism and drugs is very well documented. It's worldwide. So, insofar as we may have sort of hideouts that are manufacturing drugs on the one hand for onward transmission through Mexico, and ISIS groupings for funding terrorism, whether there's any connection one doesn't know. But the point is that they are natural bedfellows from a point of view of A, selling the drug to make the profit, and or to buy arms for literally for terrorist activities. So I think in that respect, in order to really get action on it, and from a policing point of view, one really needs a very sober reflection on the part of the ANC in particular as to regarding ideologies, shall we say, lightly, because these are a real threat. And unfortunately, I think we may very well see the consequences of the Paris Olympics. But as our A-listing, you know, I don't think we're actually important enough to China or Russia that they would support us come what may, even if they are not necessarily good actors themselves. So trying to repair the relationship with the USA is going to take a lot more work than perhaps our leadership has thought about.
Yeah, it's actually amazing how when you start looking into every sort of failed authoritarian regime, failed state authoritarian regime, Venezuela, Syria, North Korea, very quickly you uncover very strong links between the state and actually the manufacture and sale of drugs outside of that country's borders. I know that Syria has become a sort of main manufacturing area for a particular type of meth. I can't remember what the name of it is. Venezuela has become a major transit and manufacturing zone for drugs, I think cocaine being one of them. And North Korea is involved in every kind of illicit business you can think of under the sun, from counterfeiting other countries' currencies to drug trading to smuggling to everything. So, yeah, no, these you can't take these things lightly. And they feed into organized crime groups which already exist within countries. If you don't have a properly functioning intelligence service, if you are using your intelligence service to say, in the words of Lindiwe Sisulu, to bug everyone, rather than actually, you know, looking into potential foreign threats to your country, you are leaving yourself vulnerable to either being used or abused by these nefarious actors.
Sorry, Nick, can I just add to that? Is that it's finally China is sort of saying that it will do something about the manufacture of fentanyl that's flooding American markets. So, you know, the big actors, you know, do not necessarily eternally come out unscathed on this sort of thing, and that our relationship with China probably hasn't done us any good in that respect.
Indeed. Of course, the other country I forgot to mention in the sort of collapsed authoritarian state is Myanmar, which also is a major drug manufacturing area, I think, for heroin. Obviously, I'm sure this will come up again in the news as we get more details on this police raid. We have no idea at the moment, you know, even necessarily if this was a terror training camp, although I struggle to believe that 95 people being arrested doing military training who are from Libya in the middle of Mpumalanga are not in some way connected to terrorism. We'll see what comes of this story as we get more information from the police. That being said, I hope you all found today's show interesting, and we will be back on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Cheers.